This is the Deliberate Talks weekly podcast, powered by the Pixelated Egg Digital Ventures. Tune in every week to learn something new about digital marketing and entrepreneurship. And now, over to the voice of your host, Dakshin Adyantaya. Enjoy the show.
And welcome to a new episode closer to the holiday week filled with amazing surprises for you. This is Dakshin Adyantaya from the studios of the Deliberate Talks podcast, joined by an amazing guest who's all geared up to plant the seeds of inspiration from her journey. And with me today is Steph Stringfield. Hello, Steph. How are you doing?
Hello, Dakshin. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Very well. Steph is an owner of Heirloom Seed Company in the Rocky Mountains. Her journey from what started with psychology moved into the world of radio and marketing before she finally decided to become an entrepreneur in horticulture. So Steph, tell us, how has the journey been so far and what has triggered you to get into the world of horticulture?
Well, I'll try to sum it up the best I can. I decided right at the last minute when I was graduating from college that I didn't want to become a doctor of psychology. Uh-huh. And I felt I had a business out there that I was meant to own, and I couldn't figure out what it was. So I decided to graduate with my psychology degree, my bachelor's degree, and just get a job. I figured it out. And which would have been fine if I hadn't graduated in 2008 when the economy collapsed. And I couldn't get an entry-level job because there were experienced people willing to work entry-level salary.
Right.
And I couldn't get a restaurant job again because they were still holding on to this belief that I was going to leave them the moment I got a job. So I was stuck trying to start businesses for about 2.5 years. And there wasn't much demand for like cool murals and paintings and things like that. Cause that's what I was doing on the side. I only had a few things. And the radio happened as a weird coincidence. I ended up driving an hour to try to get a mall job at a place called Oshkosh B'gosh. And it sells baby clothes. And when I got there, the guy told me that he didn't actually call me down to interview me. And I was like, well, why'd you call me down here? And he said, I'm going to explain to you why I'm not going to interview you. And I've never had anyone do that before. And he was just this kid in college that didn't understand what was about to happen to him too. And I tried to explain it to him. So I was very mad because I always behave, you know, that perfect person in the interview, the right questions, the right answers, the right clothes, you know.
Right.
And I went for a drive afterwards because I was frustrated. I just wanted to listen to some music. So I turned on a radio station. It was brand new. It was my favorite one. And they were hiring. And I just knew that I wasn't qualified for the job, but I was already applying for jobs I was qualified for or overqualified for. So I thought, what's a waste of 5 minutes to apply? Yeah. And they immediately called me and I got an interview. Wow. But I was so worn down by that humiliating interview at the mall that I didn't act like myself at all. I showed up 15 minutes late. I didn't apologize for it. And he only asked me 2 questions before he offered me the job. Wow. And I was kind of wondered if that was it, because, you know, you have to have a little bit of an attitude when you're in radio.
Yeah.
So that's how I ended up in radio, and I stayed in that for a little over a year. And I started to get, I learned a lot about marketing while I was there, but I started to get some strange health issues, and I ended up leaving my job at the second station, and I was just getting ignored by the doctors. You know, they weren't telling me anything. And a few years later, I ended up having a very sudden and unexpected life-threatening episode. And the nurse told me that they don't treat people at this stage and you've got about 24 hours left.
Okay.
And so I went home. Yeah.
Wow.
That doesn't look funny here. I went home and I was standing by the window and I had been growing beets on my windowsill, but I'd never eaten them before. And I was leaving the beet tops alone because of the fact that you have to leave them there to get the root. And since I wanted to try it, I left them alone.
Right.
And I thought, well, there's no point in waiting now. So I just went ahead and ate them. And it only took a half an hour for my problem to almost disappear. And it took the next 24 hours for me to become back to normal. It was in that moment that I became hopeful and petrified because I know that seed catalogs drop things for more exciting items. And this wasn't a particular, particularly exciting variety. So I decided on two things. One, I was going to learn how to save these seeds because I needed them. Mm-hmm. But I was also going to open a seed company and I was never going to drop this particular item so that other women and people that needed it could have it.
Right.
So that's how I started the company.
Okay. Very interesting there. And a lot of life lessons there combined into an experience to start something of your own. That's very inspiring to hear. Fantastic. Yeah. And how has the journey been so far?
It's been very rewarding so far. But I finally reached a point where I'm no longer in that stage of, you know, when you first open a business, you know the statistics, how many people go down.
Yeah.
I finally passed that stage. And I can sell the fact that, you know, my business is going to succeed. And as thrilling as that is, I'm finally reaching the stage of burnout, you know, because I'm wearing all the hats.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that's really helped is that when I started my company, I wasn't thinking about LinkedIn at all, like joining it, because I don't want to work with anyone else ever again.
Right.
And I really missed the people that I met at that first radio station.
Uh-huh.
And so that was really the reason that I started like reaching out and you know, trying to reconnect with them.
Right.
And I found out that one of the people there started his own marketing company. And it's someone that I trust and I really admire his pre-thinking process. I think that's the best part of a marketer, other than being genuine.
Right.
And it's just been such a relief because I've made a decision that I'm going to start finally hiring people this upcoming year.
Right.
And so I'm just happy everything's working. I'm just happy that it's growing. You know, I'm still very excited about the whole thing.
Right. I'm going to get into that hiring part of it in some time, but I just want to know from a lockdown perspective or COVID-19, did you see a significant difference in your business? Did it actually increase in demand or did you see a scarcity? What was it like for your kind of business?
For the industry in general, it has just worked out so well for everybody because people want to be self-sufficient and they need seed.
Right.
For a newcomer like me that started 2 years before the pandemic, it's had a weird effect because during the in season and beginning of the year when everyone's buying, they're panic buying. You know, everyone knows who Burpee is, so they rush over. They see there's a wait list. Burpee themselves can't even handle this.
Right.
And there's a wait list. So they're panic buying and waiting for the seed.
Mm-hmm.
But in the off season, people are back to normal and they're willing over the summer to look at my website and buy my seeds while they're on their end of season sale. Mm-hmm. So I have this weird thing where I'm getting sales in the off season and everyone else is getting sales in the regular season. So I'm really hoping my marketing person is going to be able to help me with that too, because, you know, that panic thing is a little hard to get over, but
right.
Yeah, I'm there to help people, so that's all that matters.
Wow. You know, it's really an uncertain time. And you know, from a behavior perspective, a lot of people started getting more conscious in terms of what they were consuming during the pandemic. You know, the importance of lifestyle really came into the picture with lockdown. That's one of the reasons why I also asked you from, you know, directly buying in or getting into organic farming and other aspects of it. Did you see that people started talking to you more about it or trying to understand how to even start their own gardens or, you know, things that they can start by themselves? Did you notice something of those sorts?
Yes, I did. And one of the weird things is people are starting to understand what our, in the US, our organic label means.
Right.
And it doesn't mean what people think it means. It's a farmer has to wait 3 years after using pesticides to call something organic. But the pest doesn't leave the soil for 22 years. So buying organic potatoes, for instance, doesn't mean they're actually organic. So people have been reaching out for basic things like that. What can I substitute for potatoes? You know, how can I, just general practices of how to build garden beds and greenhouses, everything that has to do with it. There really has been an uptick in learning how to do it and organically.
Right. Okay. Interesting. You know, for a layman like me, now just getting into a more scientific approach to what you're doing, right? Plants are plants, veggies are veggies, flowers are flowers. It sounds very fascinating digging into the world of horticulture and learning more about it. Firstly, tell me, how do you know what's a good seed or a harvest? What's the science behind it? And back it up with a good example, if possible, for me to understand.
Okay, sure. So most people don't know that the seed industry is actually heavily regulated in every country that I've ever seen the rules for it. And for us, we have to test the seed batches for several things. And for some things, it's overkill. And for other things, it's perfectly acceptable for it. But we have to do a lot of testing ourselves for germination, for noxious weeds. The only reason I'm calling some of it overkill is because people like me, I harvest tomatoes by hand. And so testing them for noxious weeds, there's never going to be a noxious weed in them, but I still have to do the test.
Right.
But it makes sense for corn to be tested for noxious weeds because you cut down the whole thing. So there's plenty of weeds in the field, you know, so some of the rules make a lot of sense. And some of them are a little bit like, I wish they would go back through them because it takes up a lot of my time. And no, it's just been, I thought it was going to be overwhelming learning all the regulations because I've gotten to the point where I'm doing the testing myself now that I have gone through this huge manual and I understand it. And I've really appreciated that because I've learned all these other techniques to germinate things like lettuce seeds. They're a little bit more difficult. And so I can share the more scientific way to do it with my customers so that they get a better rate too, which is better for everybody.
Right. And how do you know it's a good harvest or not?
If it's slow to come on, you know, if it takes too long for it to the plant to go to seed, there's probably not going to be that much to go on with it. And I have to have a certain amount in order to get through all the testing and then to have enough to sell as well. So if just not enough, then it goes into my personal collection again for the next year. I don't bother with it. It's kind of a waste of time.
Okay. And, you know, there's a part in your website which also says honest dealing. And what is it about? You know, is it something that you regularly face with vendors, with dealers? I'll also get into the other challenges part, but would like to understand the whole aspect of honest dealing.
Yeah, back when I was still, I won't mention any companies by name, but back when I was still just a gardener, I guess I'm a little bit of a bargain hunter because I would always check things like how many seeds are in a pack and how much it is and how much it compares to a competitor, you know, to see who gives it. Is giving me the best rate.
Right.
And I began to trust this company so much that I stopped comparing stuff. I would just buy from them and it was fine.
Right.
Until they decided to change things up a bit and they were charging a lot for these really unique items, but there were only 5 seeds in the pack, not 250. And that's very different for me to only 5 seeds for $5. I would have never bought that. And just the fact that it wasn't very apparent on the website, the change in amount, as well as the fact that the false advertising going into the stories behind some of the seeds, I don't appreciate that. There's one, have you ever heard of the King Tut pea?
No.
It said, according to one of the websites, they sell saying that, strongly implying that it was found in the tomb of King Tut. And really, the story, that can't possibly be true because you've ever looked at the story of how he died and he was rushed into the tomb, his body actually caught on fire because of the rush job with the oils. So a seed could have never survived in that tomb with him all sealed up in the heat. So I really don't appreciate that they said something like that. It was named in honor of the expedition of finding his tomb, not from having it been found in the tomb. So I don't appreciate fake stories like that just to get sales.
Right. Interesting. Okay. And, you know, you touched upon the part of marketing and the honest dealing part of it, but tell me a bit of challenges that you went through while starting this with respect to funds, manpower, consultation, or even sales for that fact.
Yes, that was really difficult at the beginning because I've been doubling my catalog every year. And so I really started off with 23 items the first year. And I got a lot of verbal support from the people that I was reaching out to on social media. And I was mainly using Instagram at the time. So I was getting signing up for emails, but I didn't get a single purchase the first year. It took me deciding to put my ego aside. Some companies never do end of season clearances. They always keep just a steady price and they never drop it. And so I had to put my ego aside to give people a reason to try me. Because I tried other techniques, you know, being really content oriented with my marketing and just nothing was getting past the fact that I'm smaller. people reason to buy from only a catalog that only has 50 items in it when they could be shopping someone with 1,000.
Right.
And yeah, I had to build up a trusting relationship and take away their hesitation. And so they had an incentive to try me, and people have come back since then. They don't expect the sale every time. So it's just one of the techniques. That's what worked for me.
Okay. Amazing. And what about the manpower and you know, the other aspects of funding and other things like that?
It took a lot of research for me to find a place to, because I don't grow all my own seeds yet. I have a very limited selection in my Colorado Prob part, which means I grow it. And just, I'm going to keep building on that. But until then, I needed to source my seeds from somewhere. And just a coincidence happened. Another seed company decided to go out of business because their warehouse caught on fire, but all their seeds were fine. It wasn't the storage part of it. And so I was able to, during my first few years, reach out to places that were having in either a problem or were able to get me a really good deal on it, because I can't buy in huge bulk like the other companies can. And I was just really lucky to find a few places where I could make a relationship.
Right.
So funding wise, it didn't, the biggest thing was that I had to spend a lot on the testing that first year because I didn't know how to do it myself yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my biggest hurdle to overcome. And it was just kind of a bunch of coincidences of dumb luck, essentially, how I got the funding. It didn't cost too much for me to get started because I worked at my home. I didn't have any employees yet. So my overhead was very small. It's not until this coming year that I'm going to have the employees to start worrying about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't take too much to start. It just took a while to get going.
Right. Okay. And, you know, just for others who kind of really want to look at an alternate to start something fresh in their life, do you really think they need to do a professional course to become a horticulturist or, you know, self-learn themselves through starting their own business?
That's a good question. When I was in college, I took a bunch of extra courses and everything because I had so many interests. I couldn't nail down what I wanted. Mm-hmm. But so I took 2 horticulture classes while I was there, and I learned about the concept of no-till gardening, not disturbing the soil and the network within the soil to get better things. So I was already familiar with that. But I don't think people have to have a degree in it. I think it can help, but I don't think you have to, depending on what you're wanting to do. And I don't know this person, but I'm going to say, I think one person to watch if you want to get into the field is on YouTube, Charles Dowding. He's an incredible teacher and he teaches globally and he really knows how to break everything down in a simple manner. So if you're brand new, you can follow along with him easy.
And, you know, just before concluding this first round of questions, you did mention about the regulations part of it. You know, more than the regulations, are there also schemes and supports to help, you know, business like yours?
No. So for the first 2 years, I only sold within the state of Colorado because it was easy for me to understand all of the rules because I only had to look one place.
Mm-hmm.
Where our federal government is trying to put together a system because in order to sell it across state lines, you have to follow that state's regulations and every state has a different regulation. So 50 different regulations is really difficult. So they're trying to streamline it. And what they've decided to do is essentially, if you look at the hardest to follow regulations and follow that, you can sell anywhere. So it's kind of a blanket thing like that. So I had to go through and find out who's the hardest one and just reach out and ask a lot of questions because the paperwork that they have online to help doesn't help yet.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's still a lot missing there, but they're working on it every year. So it will get easier. For people that are just getting into this, you don't have to read quite as much as I did.
And have you ever thought of relocating yourselves for better regulations and better support?
I have thought about it. Actually, it's something that I have been thinking about a lot lately because right now I'm growing in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado.
Right.
And we have one of the most logical laws as far as seed goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really happy to be here. But there's also easier places to grow than out here. And it's not so much the regulation part because I enjoy this.
Right.
It's just a hard decision to make because, you know, our climate is changing and growing up here, I already experienced severe weather swings. And that's what everyone else is starting to experience, no matter where they are. Yeah. And so I'm going to get better seeds, more hardy seeds for people to grow if I stay here.
Right.
You know, but then again, I'm making it easier on myself if I get out of here and go to a more farming friendly climate. So it's just something that I'm just thinking about myself.
Okay, then, Steph, that concludes the first round of questions. We're now going to move into another round of questions. This is going to be the rapid fire round. So are you ready for some quick fire questions coming at you?
Sure.
Okay. Which are the most difficult vegetables or fruits to grow and why?
Probably onions, because they're so temperamental. They just take a long time to germinate. So sometimes you can forget where they are. You would think things would leave them alone, but, you know, they can be vulnerable to getting knocked out of the soil. If there's like a mouse or something crawling around, they don't like that in there. So they can just pop them out on you and then it dies.
Okay. When someone tells you, does horticulture even pay you? Your sarcastic or brutal answer to them is?
At least I eat for free.
What a wonderful way to put it. Okay. Teach me scientific names or alternate names for vegetables or fruits.
Okay. Brassicas are things like broccoli and cauliflower.
Uh-huh.
Cucurbit are things like cucumbers and watermelons.
Okay. Tell me an interesting thing about soil or fertilizers.
Most interesting thing about soil is the fact that it has a living network in it that has shown to be able to communicate with each other. It can send messages not only to the plants, but to each other. So if you're like standing on one part of the soil, there's messages go through the fungi that basically tells each other where you are, like if something's walking along. So that's kind of weird.
That's very interesting. Yeah. Okay. What was your very first harvest?
My very first harvest was of pumpkins.
Okay.
I don't know why I was so drawn to them, but yeah, I just wanted to grow a field of pumpkins.
And what age was this?
It was when I was in college. Until then, I'd only been picking from like family members' yards. Right. And that was the time I grew it myself. So I was around 20, 21.
Uh-huh. Okay. What is the best thing that your customer has ever told you?
Somebody gave me a review on tomatillos and they said they grow like weeds. So I was really happy about that.
Wow. Okay. And what's planned for you in the year 2022?
Well, partly because of COVID, I'm going to have my first contract or employee be different than what I would have normally done.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I would have hired someone to help me with the packing of the seeds, the agriculture part, you know, sending orders, customer service, something in-house.
Right.
So because of COVID, I'm going to do a remote type of job. And I'm sad to say I'm going to give up part of the marketing and hire someone to do that.
Right. Right. Okay, fantastic. And finally, before we conclude, three do's and three don'ts for people who would consider a career or business opportunity in horticulture.
I would say the first do is to get your product out at a farmer's market in front of people so they can meet you.
Mm-hmm.
The second do is to make sure that you're growing items that you've researched that people want, but also that you enjoy growing so you don't get burnt out because there's a lot of failures along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And the third do, I would say, is to understand that having the like a website, that side of it is just as important as the rest of your business because it's everyone else's first impression of you.
Right.
And then, let's see, for the three don't,
mm-hmm.
I would don't use pesticides. We just don't need that. I would say, I guess the next don't is don't try to go it alone.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I did and it was a struggle and make sure that you have someone in whatever part that you feel like you're lacking.
Right.
And then I would say the other don't do is don't waste anything if you can. You know, I've decreased my amount of like paper that I use for packages, you know, the world's on fire. We don't need to, you know, burn up anything excess. So make everything as recyclable as you can.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And with that, Steph, we have come to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for making time for this conversation. And before we leave, where can our listeners know more about your work or your journey?
They can visit me online at heirloommountain.com or look me up on LinkedIn because I also have a business profile on there that they can follow along with.
Right.
So it's by the same name, or look me up, Stephanie Stringfield.
Okay. And thank you so much for making time for the show. I had a great time hosting you. Hope you enjoyed your time on the show as well.
I did. Thank you so much for having me.
Super. Best wishes always. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so that brings us to the end of today's conversation. And before we wrap up, here is an interesting fact for the day. A stat from AIPH highlights that Thailand is the home to production base of around 14,000 hectares, of which 1/3 is dedicated to orchids. Interesting, right? So that's it for today. This is Dakshin Adyantaya signing off. Don't forget to hit the follow button on your favorite audio platforms or get in touch with me on deliberatetalks@gmail.com. Join in next Monday for a new episode. Until then, inspire and be inspired.